What a glorious day it is to gather with God's people for food, for fellowship, and to sing with all the saints of the past and the present these triumphant hymns of praise and adoration, what with the flowers and the pastries and the fellowship and the music. It's not hard to believe that Jesus lives and moves among us this morning. Our hymns and our scriptures proclaim that Jesus is alive. And that is the heart and the core of the conviction of the Christian church. It's why we're open this morning for worship. In fact, it's why the Christian church gathers every Sunday for worship. That's why we sing. Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 says it even more dramatically, that without the resurrection, our faith is in vain. We really don't have anything interesting to talk about, nothing new to talk about this morning or ever. In other words, this strange, mysterious, deep belief in Easter, in the resurrection, in the power of God to triumph over death and the grave is really at the heart and core of what brings us together. And it's really what shapes the church. The resurrection, as we say, is God's stamp of approval on the life of Jesus, on the way that Jesus lived, on this suffering pattern of Jesus on the way to the cross and his welcome to outsiders and his love for everyone and his trust in God is then the pattern and the shape of our own lives. But the shock and the mystery of life after death is just so hard to get our heads around, so difficult to comprehend that it takes a long time, if not a lifetime, to comprehend, if at all. And the beauty of the gospel stories, as well illustrated here in Luke again this morning, is they don't deny the struggle, the difficulty in believing and getting their heads around this grand sort of core belief that Jesus is alive. And so the women, they go tell the apostles, and Luke tells us that they don't really believe. It seemed to them an idle tale, and they don't believe. Every Easter account in our Gospels contain this honest reference to the struggle of faith. This is not at all what the first disciples were thinking about or anticipating. As one scholar notes, these early followers of Jesus don't especially appear gifted to just make this stuff up. It's not in their creative imaginations to just make this story up. So then how does this faith, this Easter faith, this resurrection faith get started? And what difference does it make in our own lives? What difference does Easter make for us as we live our lives today? And as we think about that story, I'd like to invite us to join the women here in Luke's gospel on this journey of faith. For many of us who grew up attending church, hanging around church most of our lives, we know that one of the characteristics of Luke's gospel is that Luke is rather progressive on the women's issue. At the beginning of the gospel, Luke has his chorus of women that are right there at the beginning and are singing kind of ahead of time about what God is doing in the world. And so we have the story of Elizabeth, for instance, and Anna in the temple, well advanced in years, and yet she's there to experience the good news of the announcement of Jesus. And then, of course, Mary, the mother of Jesus, is proclaimed as the first believer in Luke's gospel. She believes the words of the angel. And then throughout the gospel, another Mary sits at Jesus' feet in the posture of discipleship and learning. And in Luke 8, we're told that the same chorus of women that had followed Jesus are there to finance his ministry and help support Jesus in his work and ministry. And now at the end of the gospel, this same chorus of women are gathered around Jesus. In fact, Luke's Easter account begins rather strangely with he doesn't really name who it is that goes to the tomb. He simply begins by saying they show up. On the first day of the week, they come to the tomb, and they are taking spices that they had prepared, and then they find that the stone has been rolled away, and then they enter the tomb, and then they're perplexed by its emptiness. And we scratch our head, and who are the they? And if you have your Bibles open, you go back at the last chapter, chapter 23, the story of Good Friday, we know who the they are. Luke continues the Good Friday story here on Sunday. Back at verse 53, they are the women who had followed Jesus from Galilee to Jerusalem, this five-day journey by foot from Galilee to Jerusalem. They have followed Jesus from Galilee, and they saw the tomb and where they had put the body of Jesus, and then they went home and prepared the spices, and then early on the first day of the week, they are the ones that are coming to the tomb, and they are the most committed, faithful disciples of Jesus. And then they go from being perplexed to terrified because they receive this holy encounter in the tomb. These two men in dazzling white is a kind of reminder of the transfiguration where Jesus' clothes were dazzling white. And here are these two men in dazzling white again. And they tell of this holy encounter and nobody believes. The disciples think it an idle tale. It's hard. It's hard. And then later in Luke, as Luke unpacks the Easter story, this road to Emmaus, two disciples are going along and they don't recognize Jesus either. They don't see Jesus right with them until he breaks bread. And then later the disciples are all gathered in a room and then Jesus shows up and it's as if a ghost is present. It's tough for us to live this new life every day of the week. Someone has said, maybe we're Saturday people. We want to believe, we want to have hope that Jesus is with us and that God's power and presence is there on our journey, but it's just too good to be true sometimes. I mean, we slog through the muck and the mire of life. We have real hurt and pain and disappointment and division and unanswered prayer and where is God? We wonder, and we live in this in-between state of existence. But here are these women who do the hard stuff of following Jesus in the midst of the cross and burial, and they show up the next day, 2 days later, to anoint the body of Jesus. They put themselves in a position to be surprised by these two holy messengers, this encounter. And this encounter is very different in Luke's gospel than any of the other gospels. Two things that are different. These two men in dazzling white say, first of all, why are you looking for the living among the dead? Why aren't you waiting for the living to show up in real life? Why are you looking for the living in a cemetery at the tomb? You should expect surprises out there somewhere. And then the second thing that they're told is to remember. They're honored by being told to remember because somehow they were there when Jesus first told about his death and resurrection. Remember, it wasn't just the 12 male disciples that were told of Jesus' impending death and resurrection. No, the women. Remember how Jesus told you when he was still in Galilee how the Son of Man would need to suffer and be crucified and then 3 days later raise again. These women, interestingly enough, aren't told to go and tell. They're not just errand messengers to carry out kind of the good news and go tell the disciples. They're not told to go and tell. They're told to remember. They're honored by being reminded that they were there when Jesus was talking about all this. Remember how he told you. These true disciples are honored as faithful disciples to be on the lookout for the risen Christ wherever they go. To remember, to be on the lookout, to remember the places that Jesus hung out, to anticipate some surprises yet to come, to live with hope and awareness that in the future anything could happen and anything is possible and they could be surprised anywhere. somehow in this small holy encounter, Easter happens for these women. They don't even get an appearance of Jesus. But they had been there with Jesus in the point of death, and now they get this holy encounter, this small glimpse of Easter, because they know what pain is like. A Presbyterian pastor, Kara Root, puts it in more graphic, poetic form why she needs the resurrection. "I need the resurrection," she writes, "because my sister is sick and can't afford insurance. I need the resurrection," she writes, "because I've told a weeping Haitian mom, no, I can't take your son home with me. I need the resurrection," she writes, "because I've been rushed off a Jerusalem street so a robot could blow up a bag that could have blown us up. I need the resurrection," she writes, "because I've exploded in rage and watched their tiny faces cloud with hurt. I need the resurrection," she writes, "because evil is pervasive and I participate. I need the resurrection because it promises. It promises that in the end, all things are made right. Death loses, hope triumphs, and love and life prevail. We need the resurrection because we've been through pain and through suffering. We need to live with that hope and that anticipation that something new can happen in this world." So these faithful disciples are encountered by these two men in dazzling white, not by any sightings of Jesus, but they're simply invited to live with that sense of anticipation and hope that they might yet meet the risen Jesus on the way. And so, friends, as we leave our service today, might we anticipate the risen Jesus show up on our way? Maybe as we break bread at tables this afternoon. Maybe Jesus could show up in the face of a stranger who journeys with us, who comes beside us. Maybe Jesus could show up when our world seems closed off and the doors and the windows are shut and we see no hope or possibility. Another commentator on Luke's gospel notes the way Luke uses this interesting conjunction, this interesting small word, but, in his Easter story, but it comes out at the beginning of the account, but on the third day, and then it comes out three or four more times in these few verses. It's a defiant conjunction that gets in the face of every cynical, hopeless, harsh evaluation of the state of things. But God is not finished yet. God hasn't spoken the last word. It turns our present circumstances around. April Yamasaki, pastor and author, and a recent commentary on this Easter text from Luke, reflects on her own journey of moving recently out of a pastorate, moving to British Columbia to be a kind of author in residence in British Columbia. And in her new office, she didn't have room for all the books that she wanted to take along. She only had a little bit of shelf space. And some of the books she could part with and give away and donate, but some of the books were just so special, had meant so much to her in terms of encouragement and inspiration and shaping of her life that she couldn't part with them. She needed to take them along. In fact, she goes to reflect at how many books there are in this world and how many new books that continue to keep being written. She could spend the rest of her life just reading somebody else's books. Why should she, an author, even pretend to make a contribution to this wealth of book material that's out there in libraries? She muses, why should she venture to write it all? Because she could spend the rest of her life just reading the books and writings of others. And she reflects on this great chorus of women in the Gospels, a small but mighty group of them, and they're named here, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and then it says, and the other women who were with them. This is not just three women who are there at the tomb. This is a chorus of women. She says, it takes the voices of all of us. It takes the voices of all of us to speak the good news of Easter. We all have a life that we've been given. We all have a voice out of which we can speak. We all have an encounter, an experience out of which we can live and practice and share. Our voice, our faithful voice, is necessary. Friends, this is the good news of Easter. Our small and insignificant voices, voices that aren't named in the gospel story, are necessary and important for the sharing, for the living of this faith. As we go forth in anticipation of being surprised again. Our voices are necessary as we look at the world, sometimes in disgust and other times in dismay, when brutality and violence seem to be the rule of the day. Remember, friends, that this world is loved by God. Remember the ministry of Jesus and how Jesus came to reconcile all things, to put the world back together again, and to live with the sense of anticipation that Jesus will meet us on that road. At our tables, when the doors of the house seem closed and shut, in the presence of a stranger, friends, this is the old and joyful proclamation of the church. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed.